Political parties are unveiling welfare promises ahead of the Bihar Assembly elections. But the cost of implementing large-scale cash transfer schemes for women could turn out to be significantly higher for one of India's poorest states. A money control analysis shows that even under the most conservative assumptions, providing 2,500 rupees per month to women could cost the state 28,326 crore annually. Slightly less than Bihar's budgeted fiscal deficit for FY26, or 2.6% of the gross state domestic product. Welcome to Beyond Averages, our weekly data podcast where we try to bring the numbers behind the big story. As Bihar elections loom, parties are trying to replicate the winning formula, raining down freebies in the hopes of converting them into votes and seats. Congress has promised 2,500 per month to poor women in Bihar, something that is being offered in Maharashtra, Delhi, Karnataka and other parts of the country. But can Bihar, a state with fewer resources, make good on this promise? We have with us Professor N.R. Bhanumurthy, Director, Madras School of Economics, and Paras Jasrai, Associate Director, India Ratings and Research, to discuss the issue. Welcome to the show. Let me take our viewers first to some of the graphics that we have for them. If you look at it, and the number of women that will get these transfers, let's assume that 2,500 is what everyone is getting, then as per the caste census that Bihar conducted, there would be 9.4 million women who would get this. Now, why we have come to that number? There were 94 lakh or 9.4 million poor people in Bihar, and we have assumed one woman per family. There would be much more, but we are going by a conservative estimate here. So how much will it cost? This would cost 28,326 crore rupees, or 2.6% of the GDP. Now, if we switch to the poverty line numbers, then about 13.5 million women get this benefit at a cost of 40,626 crore rupees, or 3.7% of the GDP. If we go by the Maharashtra or Delhi model, in Maharashtra, far more women than they had anticipated had enrolled for the scheme. That's about 19 million women would be there in Bihar at 57,140 crore rupees and 5.2% of the GDP, which is almost double of what the caste census says. Now, where does this put us? Where does this put Bihar actually? If you look at it, on the finances part, this would put a heavy burden. Now, as per caste census, this is the spending and this is your fiscal deficit at 32,718 crore rupees. That's about a 4,000 crore rupee difference here. And that 4,000 crore rupees, that means it's almost doubling the fiscal deficit of the state, which is supposed to be 3% as per FY26 budget. Now, capital outlay is 40,532, and if you spend as per poverty line, that's 40,626. So almost all your capital goes into this. Now, if we look at spending as per the Bihar and as per the Maharashtra and Delhi model, then this would subsume all the grants in aid from the center and would almost cover the own tax revenue that the state earns. So not much money would be left for Bihar if they go by this model. Let's go back to our experts to understand what is happening here. Now, with each elections, we have witnessed a rise in subsidy transfers. Is this sustainable for states, especially when we look at cash transfers? Professor Bhanumurthy, first to you.
Well, first of all, one needs to understand that all the governments would like to follow the welfare model. And we are a welfare state. In that sense, every government has a responsibility to focus on the social sector. But most importantly, I think the recent trends at the state level clearly shows that there is a structural shift in the way government functions when it comes to social sector programs. And I think there is a shift from the kind transfer to the cash transfer kind of a situation. Now, in that situation, I think the governments need to choose either one of them, and they cannot have both as you rightly pointed out, that it will put more pressure not only on the fiscal deficit, but also crowds out the capital expenditure that is required for the overall GDP as well as employment growth in those states. So I think I'm not concerned with increasing cash transfer kind of situation, but at the same time, there is a need to recalibrate the past schemes which have been continuing, which none of them have any kind of sunset clauses. So in that sense, in fact, our own study clearly shows cash transfer is much better than the kind transfer, and it reduces a lot of cost of implementation, and also it can be targeted. So in that context, I would say that the shift from kind to cash by many of the states, I think it's more welcoming in my view.
Got your point. Paras, let me come to you, because you've been examining state budgets as well for India Ratings. You look at Maharashtra and other states, capital is down about 11%, capital outlays down about 11% for FY26. How much can they do in cash transfers, especially when it comes to poorer states? And can this be increased over a period of time? As sir said, if you're moving kind transfers to cash transfers, it makes sense. But if you're not doing that, then ultimately you're piling up more subsidies.
Yeah, that's correct. And if you see for Bihar specifically, the CAG had done their audit report for FY23, and they had said that gradually the share of subsidy in overall Bihar's revenue expenditure is going nearing toward the 10% mark. And majority of that is the power sector burden, 85-85% of that is there, and it is gradually hitting at a multi-year level. So that's the kind of increase in subsidy that is happening. It is required because as sir had mentioned that as well, the state, it is the responsibility of the state to provide the services, especially in the social sector, this to the lower end ones. As we know that Bihar is in the low income category, if one goes by the World Bank classification. So that also, like, you know, the foretells that, you know, the state has to provide those services. But then, yes, that balance has to be taken care of very significantly, because if you see, just to give a very small context, in FY25, for the 26 states whose numbers are as of now present, if you see, which does not include Bihar, because Bihar doesn't have released the data. So if you see the data, then there has been an increase in the revenue expenditure. About 10-11% has been the increase, which has increased from the previous year. And as a result of that, we have seen that also on coupled with the pressure on revenues front, capital expenditure growth has halved from 21%, 22% last year in FY24 to just about 10% in 25. And that gives a primer that if this continues on a sustainable basis, and if there is no rationalization, then definitely that kind of cutting would be done. And CapEx being the one which is more of like discretionary one, mostly by the state. So that would that usually takes the cut, faces the axe, and broadly that has been the trend in FY25 across the states. And we have seen that it becomes a bit difficult also for states to go on spending on these states like Maharashtra and Karnataka. Karnataka has had to increase their non-tax revenue, whether by hiking metro rates and all, to support the kind of schemes that they had announced in the while getting elected. So that's the kind of thing that even high income states are facing pressures in terms of implementing such schemes. So there has to be some bit of limit in terms of what can be done, and that requires rationalization from the already existing schemes that are done.
There has to be a limit is what Paras is saying, but Professor Bhanumurthy, let me come back to you on this part. Not all states can afford the same kind of cash transfers either. So you give 2500 in Maharashtra, probably it's more viable there. Is that 2500 viable in Bihar as well? Because there are stress balance sheets. Also, the standard of living is much lower there, so you don't require as much in costs. So from that perspective, does it make sense for it to be a 2500 standard everywhere, or would it be better that it's lower in some places and higher in some if you have to do this?
Well, we do have a very clear cost of living index available for each state and also for even for urban and rural areas. So that should be the criteria for any kind of a cash transfer that the state governments want to plan. But in the if the states don't follow that and they try to get a some kind of a random number, but then I think I don't have much comments on that. But what is more important, I think, you cannot focus only on the expenditure side if you really want to strengthen the public finances of the states. And I think you also need to focus more on two things. One is on the own tax revenues and also on how you spend it. I think the states which are actually going for the cash transfer schemes are turning out to be more efficient in terms of public delivery mechanism compared to the states which are still sticking to the kind transfer. So in that sense, I do support the cash transfer scheme. And you also need to understand this is also focused, this is also targeted kind of a scheme. Again, there are many studies to suggest that any disposable incomes left with a woman of a household will have multiplier impacts on other indicators like child health or nutrition or the overall family nutrition. So all these things have been clearly established. So I think in principle, I'm a big supporter of the cash transfer scheme for the women, but the number, the 2,500 is something. It should be coming from the cost of living index from the states specifically.
Paras, you were just talking about the 26 states study, and sir is just about talking about revenue raising abilities. Does the study somewhere suggest that states' ability for own tax revenues has gone up over the last year? Is it higher than the average, lower than the long-term average? What has happened there?
There, if you see the own tax revenue, which is a significant chunk for many of the states, then that has like improved because of the kind of the compliance measures and also the use of different data analytical tools like AI, ML. All of that has helped in tax evasion. And various states have, whether Kerala, Delhi, Punjab, many states have announced various tax reforms, which has helped them increase their own tax revenue. And that's what we have seen that, especially on SOTR, various states have seen that increase, which where it has been greater than the nominal GDP in FY25. If you see, the nominal GDP was about 9.8%. The tax collection growth on the state's part has been higher than that, around 11%. So that indicates that 10 to 11%. So that indicates that the buoyancy is there. That indicates the efficiency of the tax administration. But yeah, the states are facing pressures on the grants front, where they have witnessed a decline again, like last year in from the central government, and that's what they had. They have been much more. Overall revenue receipts have not grown that much, about just around 7.5% in FY25, which is obviously lower than last year. So that's what broadly one has to see, that only one if one state has that revenue generating capacity, because most of the state, if you see, whether it's like Bihar or UP for that matter, they are the ones which get Bihar for specifically gets over 70% of their revenues from the central government. So they are very critically dependent on that. They don't have that kind of own generating capacity like a state like Karnataka, Gujarat, or Maharashtra for that matter. So a blanket size rules where, I mean, that 2500 rupees is spent right across the state, that would be very, very having a lot of stress on the balance sheet, and also for the state, it would be not viable.
And if I'm not mistaken, Paras, this 70% has stayed constant for quite a few years. It's not just 70% now, it's been 70% for a long period of time.
So, If you look at the per capita revenue receipts over the PR as well, I mean, that's around 17,000 rupees. And if you compare that with the state like Maharashtra, then Maharashtra is double that. And that explains also that Maharashtra is better in terms of standard of living. But Bihar is replicates sort of a lower income country that we have. And UP is also in that category. So that's the kind of difference that is there. And one needs to be very mindful of this difference when one is implementing the schemes for the social sector for the lower end people. It is required, but then one has to like really look at other schemes as well, have a relook, and then doing cash transfers, as sir has also mentioned, research has also shown that they are much more targeted, and the multiplier effect is much more higher. So that can be done, but then that only requires the states need to have a relook at the overall developmental expenditure and the kind of schemes that they currently have.
Professor Bhanumurthy, coming back to you, what has stunted the ability of states to actually generate more revenues, especially the poorer ones? I know Maharashtra gets a lot of industry, Karnataka gets a lot of tech services, IT. So, what's stunted and what can be done to improve this? I believe we have lost Professor Bhanumurthy for a while. Let me take you to the graphs till that point of time and show you what has happened in terms of Bihar. So, if you look at it, Bihar finances were already teetering on the edge before this announcement. So if this just come into effect, it will have an impact on the state. Let's have this cell here. If you have FY22, 3.8% was the fiscal deficit for the state and 30.9% was to the debt to GDP ratio, debt to GSDP ratio. This increased in FY23 to 32.3% and 6%, but this also corresponds with the part where Bihar was actually spending more on capex. Now, FY24, this has come down 4.2%, but look at what has happened to debt to GDP. Outstanding debt has gone up to 38.9%. FY25 is 3%, and if you look at the revised numbers, which are usually not believable, it's 9.2% here. In the case of debt to GDP, it's 37.1%, which has been estimated. FY26 is 3% again, and 37% on this part. As far as the debt to GDP is concerned, let's add the numbers here to show you what will happen if they go with the even the common minimum program. So let's say FY26 is when subsidy transfers come into place, and because some of that year is gone and they implemented right after, let's say it's implemented only for 3 quarters, it will add 1 percentage point here to the overall debt to GDP ratio, raising it to 38% and raising this to 4%. Now, the Finance Commission has a 3% ceiling here. Now, for the next year, which is FY27, if you add 2.6%, some administrative cost is there, we're discounting for that, this would go up to close to 37.5% for the state. So, your debt to GDP ratio is actually not coming down. Goes higher, you add a double the ratio. Let's say Bihar gives a lot, and you have about 40%, which is touching the limits of the Finance Commission. FY28, Bihar is again estimating 3%, which is right on the edge, not much lower than the 3% mark that the Finance Commission has set. Let's go to another point and show what Paras was talking about when he was talking about capex transfers. Now, if you look at it, capex has become a casualty, especially in Bihar, if you estimate, and this is the reason for it. Now, in FY24, 14.5% of the total expenditure was capex. This came down to 12.5% here in FY25 and 12.8%. It's only slightly up. Now, if you look at the spending on health and other indicators, that's down as well. Now, let me show you the numbers here. If you look at health and estimate that, then the state was spending about 19.4% in FY24. FY25 was supposed to be 21.9%, and this will come down to 21% in FY26. So, this is also declining. Look at, similarly, look at education and 5.8% here. right, goes down to 6.2%, and then comes back to 6.6% and comes back to 6.2%. So Bihar is looking at losses in spending on education and health. Road and infrastructure spending would also be down. So there are a lot of factors that we are considering here that you have to see when Bihar gives out these transfers. The other option here that becomes is what happens to inflation with these transfers or the minimum wages. Do people want to work when they get 2,500 rupees per month in their bank account? Or would this lead to a dropping out of women from the workforce? Now, labor force participation in the country is already very low. You compare it to a Bangladesh and other economies, and labor force participation in India comes down to about 42%, and Bangladesh is much higher. You compare it to China, China is close to about 65%. So what happens to them? That would be one question. And the other question would be what happens to also women who are receiving these transfers. Of course, as Professor Bhanumurthy said, it leads to women saving. Any additional money goes into health, education of children, and improving social indicators. But does it lead to inflation as well? Because inflation would be a concern much for the poorer economies. I think we have Paras with us again.
On the if you look at the evidence so far from Maharashtra and Karnataka, we have seen that once those free bus schemes was announced in Karnataka, we saw a lot of women coming up and going to places, and even for work, that participation also increased. So yeah, and also we have seen the similar sort of evidence where there has been a lot of women empowerment because of the cash transfers that were given, especially targeted for women. So that kind of ripple effects we have seen, and that is why a targeted scheme, a cash transfer, is much better, and it has the kind of benefits, spillover effects to various other development indicators. That's the evidence that we have seen, and that's the same similar sort of evidence has been also observed in Brazil's cash transfer, which is the largest cash transfer scheme, and that also indicated that the income effects was higher, and the overall inflationary impact of that was not that higher. It was manageable. And if you look at the current structure of inflation also, which is largely driven by food prices in India, we have seen that most of the women, or most of the expenditure on it helps take care of the expenditure which is done on essential services like education, health, and also in different discretionary spending. It supports that. So overall, it is not that kind of inflationary impact that we have witnessed. But if it is targeted, then the impact is lower. That's what we have seen. And overall, but that depends ultimately on how different states implement it, because it depends ultimately on the administrative capacity. And states like Maharashtra and Karnataka and Tamil Nadu, over the years, have they have been able to do it in much better way than the ones which are facing issues, especially Bihar, which has administrative challenges also in terms of spending and implementing these schemes.
Professor Bhanumurthy, coming back to you, I was asking you a question regarding what has gone wrong. Why has the revenue raising capabilities of these states, especially the poor ones, stunted, and what can they do to improve that?
I think the increased share of untied grants to the states under the 14th Finance Commission must have led to large surpluses at the state level. In my view, I think if you look at many of the states, particularly the states that we are talking about, in fact, they were running revenue surpluses for quite a long time. So it ultimately boils back to the state capacity in terms of implementation. As Paras pointed out, I think the state capacity becomes a major factor for both, whether in terms of increasing the revenue receipts or in terms of spending efficiently the resources that is available for the states. And in fact, it's not specific to Bihar alone, but there are most of the states. even at the central government level, I think we need to really focus more on how to price the public utilities. You know, right now we just don't have, you know, very kind of a very short term measures. In fact, again, Paras mentioned what Karnataka has done, increasing the rates of the metro prices or raising the milk prices and all those things. But I think what is important is we need to have a robust public utility pricing mechanism in this country. Take, for instance, water we don't really charge. And there are many other things. I think the power sector is certainly a big drag on the states. So these are the ways you need to really improve if you want to really improve the state's fiscal capacity or fiscal conditions. And one small point I wanted to bring it for your, for the question that you asked in the previous, for Mr. Paras. I think the way states spend also depends on to what extent the digitalization happened in those states. Again, I don't want to take specific states' name. There are many states, even today, they don't have land records. In that kind of situation, how do you really improve your public delivery mechanism? I think that should be the focus of the states, if you want to really strengthen the fiscal conditions.
It's interesting you mentioned that. Let me show you something. Like, I don't have figures for it as of now, but I can of course refer to this here. So when you were talking about digitalization, let's look at UPI usage, and Bihar actually is one of the better states there, with 86.4% of the people saying that they know how to use UPI. Whether they use it or not is a different thing. They say they know how to use UPI. This is as per the government's latest numbers. Now, for Karnataka, this is much lower at 80%. And for Kerala, if I'm not mistaken, it's about 82%. But when it comes to knowing about cyber frauds or knowledge about those things, then this drops down to, for Bihar, this drops down to about 60%. And this stays about 70%. For Karnataka and Kerala. So there's that part also, that even with digitalization, what kind of digitalization is coming is also a factor, as Professor Bhanumurthy was pointing out. Professor, I want to put another question to you that I put to Paras as well. Now, income transfers are a good thing because they're more targeted, they do better delivery. Are they inflationary as well? And some of the detractors I talk to say that when you give 2500 rupees per month to women, they would drop out of the workforce, they would not work. Is there some truth in that?
No, I don't agree with that. You know, this is only a subsistence, not much, much below the subsistence allowance. For a whole month, 2500 for a household or for a woman is, I don't really think that it is going to create any kind of inflationary pressure. Rather, I would argue that it should lead to mobility of the women. I think, in fact, I would argue that it will have a positive impact on the labor force participation rate among the women. And by the way, one in my list of concerns at the state level is nutrition tops in that list in my list. So I think the nutrition is one thing which we could not really address with so many measures. So much of money has been flown into that, but I think this particular scheme, like transferring money to women, should certainly address those issues which has been dragging us for a very, very long time. So I think the nutrition should definitely improve wherever this cash transfer scheme is happening. But again, we should not limit only to the cash transfer scheme to women. In fact, one of the most, one major public policy which I think will improve the labor force participation among the women is the free bus services being given by many states. Again, this is apolitical, and across the political stream, they have followed it. And again, that with mobility is one thing will definitely lead to increase in the labor force participation rate. So there are some good things that many states are doing when it comes to so-called freebies. But there are also some of the concerns, like some states giving that free power. Again, I would say that it is clearly a freebie, which will have a huge negative implications on the state finances. So in that sense, there is a mix of policies. I think we need to focus and enlarge the schemes which will really help both social sector as well as the fiscal conditions at the states.
Thank you, Professor. Thank you, Paras, for being on the show. It was great having you. And as we progress and as we develop, I think we will have more such discussions, especially around what are freebies and what are not freebies, and two, what kind of effects are they having. I think as these schemes enter their year two or year three, we'll have a better idea as to what's working. As Sir said, free bus rides is a great scheme. I think the free bicycle scheme in certain states did help improve the education, girl education aspects as well. So we will look into those aspects as well. Thank you for coming on the show. It was great having you both, and we'll love to have you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, nutrition is one aspect that experts say might get a help from this. Professor Bhanumurthy points out that mobility also might help in this regard, actually pointing out that the detractors are wrong in the fact that women won't work. Probably it would also lead to a higher labor force participation, which is the much needed thing as of now. For any society to become developed, female labor force participation also needs to go up so that the other half is not missing from the society and its development. Thank you for watching Beyond Averages. We will have you again next week. Thank you for coming on the show.